It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Two senior Kenyan security officials ousted in the wake of the latest terrorist attack. Nigeria's death toll rises from twin attacks Monday. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta announced Tuesday the replacement of his interior minister and chief of police hours after a militant attack in the country's northeast left 36 dead. Mr. Kenyatta replacing Interior Minister Joseph Ole Lenku and accepted a retirement request from Police Chief David Kumayo. Both officials are criticized for failing to stop a string of attacks blamed on Islamic extremists. In the latest attack, the Somali militant group al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for 36 deaths at a quarry near the town of Mandera, where witnesses say gunmen struck as workers slept in their tents. Last month, al-Shabaab gunmen killed nearly 30 people on a bus in the same region. The Kenyan leader says the militant strategy is clear.
The obvious intent is to create hostility and suspicion across ethnic and religious lines and to drive non-Muslims from certain parts of this country. The ultimate aim of this atrocious campaign is to establish an extremist caliphate in our region.
An al-Shabaab statement said its fighters were punishing Kenya for sending troops to fight in Somalia. Nigerian sources say more than 60 people were killed in attacks Monday by suspected Islamist militants on two state capitals. A hospital morgue worker said at least 59 died in the fighting in Yobe State's capital, Damaturu. Witnesses say at least five others were killed when two explosions ripped through a market in the Borno state capital, Maiduguri. The attack believed to be the work of two female suicide bombers. No claim of responsibility for either attack, but suspicion has fallen on the militant group Boko Haram. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization has revised upward the Ebola death toll in the three hardest-hit West African countries of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. It now stands at 6,055. Worldwide, in eight countries, the death rate since March has climbed to 6,070, with more than 17,000 known cases. Sierra Leone, meanwhile, has quarantined hundreds of thousands more of its citizens to contain the deadly virus. More than half the nation now is in a lockdown. The latest district, Tongkolili, no one is allowed to enter or leave. The World Bank Tuesday pledged further assistance to Liberia, revealing the cost of fighting Ebola across West Africa has now exceeded $2 billion and will cut growth and cause recession in some economies. Jim Young Kim is World Bank President speaking in Monrovia.
We've already provided $200 million to Liberia for the Ebola crisis, and we'll continue to support the ambitious plan to get to zero cases as soon as possible. This involves making sure that every community is protected from Ebola and that all Liberians have access to the health care that they deserve.
The World Bank warns Liberia is now likely to grow at an annual rate of just 2.2%. Sierra Leone's economy predicted to expand by 4%. Guinea's slump is even more pronounced. Projection for its growth has been cut from 4.5% to just 0.5%. In the U.S. Tuesday, speaking at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, President Obama lauded U.S. efforts to fight Ebola at its source.
Some 3,000 of our service members and civilians are now on the ground, manning that air bridge, moving in supplies, building treatment units. The new medical unit we built in Liberia to treat health workers opened last month and has begun discharging patients Ebola-free. We've ramped up the capacity to train hundreds of new health workers per week. We've helped improve burial practices across Liberia, and as a consequence, we've seen some encouraging news, a decline in infection rates in Liberia.
But Mr. Obama says U.S. efforts could be hampered by a lack of funding and urged Congress to approve another $6.2 billion, warning the battle against the disease is far from over. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party began a key Congress Tuesday. 90-year-old President Robert Mugabe set to appoint a new set of loyalists, reportedly including his wife Grace. She's expected to take charge of the Women's League. Vice President Joyce Mujuru, once a rising star and possible Mugabe successor, is on the verge of being expelled from the party. Amid accusations, she plotted to assassinate the elderly leader. Ms. Mujuru has denied the allegation. And the French press agency reports a major split in Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front, with two factions selecting rival presidential candidates in next month's election to replace the late President Michael Sata. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Tony Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Obama touts U.S. successes in the fight against Ebola and calls for more congressional funding.
The new medical unit we built in Liberia to treat health workers opened last month and has begun discharging patients Ebola-free. We've ramped up the capacity to train hundreds of new health workers per week. And as a consequence, we've seen some encouraging news, a decline in infection rates in Liberia.
President Barack Obama speaking Tuesday at the National Institutes of Health near Washington, D.C. Liberia's ambassador credits international support for the decline in Ebola cases in Liberia. Scientists are optimistic about stopping the latest Ebola outbreak. And Nigeria cancels U.S. military training in the fight against Boko Haram.
No, we did not receive any specific reason as to why they wanted to cancel the training, but their notification was in response to a request that we'd sent to them requesting their attention regarding moving forward with the third phase of training.
Lieutenant Colonel John Cantwell is the acting defense and army attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Abuja. The long-awaited ZANU-PF Congress has opened in Harare, and a former South Sudan Army commander joins the rebels. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nearly 3 months after the first case of Ebola was diagnosed on U.S. soil, President Barack Obama is touting progress in battling the deadly disease, both in the United States and in West Africa, while calling for more funding. VOA's correspondent Arul Pandey has more from the White House.
Ebola may have faded from daily U.S. news headlines in recent weeks, but the virus that has killed nearly 6,000 people in West Africa is still very much on the mind of the American president.
And the urgency remains, because if we are going to actually solve this problem for ourselves, we have to solve it in West Africa as well.
Mr. Obama spoke Tuesday at the U.S. National Institutes of Health, where he toured laboratories and congratulated researchers for the completion of Phase 1 clinical trials of a potential vaccine to treat Ebola, clearing the way for it to go to clinical trials in West Africa. The president also touted progress in the U.S. fight against the disease. He said the number of American hospitals prepared to deal with Ebola has increased from just 3 facilities to 35 nationwide in the last 2 months, and the number of laboratories testing for Ebola has increased from 13 to 42 since August. In its overseas response, the United States has scaled up the deployment of American personnel in West Africa, with 200 civilians and 3,000 service members on the ground. President Obama said efforts to battle Ebola at its source are showing results, particularly in Liberia. There, the United States has built 3 of 10 planned Ebola treatment units, and the number of beds for Ebola patients is expected to reach 2,000 by early next year.
We've ramped up the capacity to train hundreds of new health workers per week. We've helped improve burial practices across Liberia, and as a consequence, we've seen some encouraging news, a decline in infection rates in Liberia.
Still, despite the progress, Mr. Obama said the fight is far from over. He noted the outbreak has gotten worse in countries like Sierra Leone, where infections and the death toll have risen in recent weeks.
And this can still spread to other countries, as we've seen in Mali. Every hot spot is an ember that, if not contained, can become a new fire. So we cannot let down our guard even for a minute.
The president took the opportunity Tuesday to urge members of Congress to approve his request for $6.2 billion in emergency funding for the Ebola response before lawmakers recess for the holidays. Arul Pandey, VOA News, The White House.
Liberia's ambassador to the United States, Jeremiah Sulonte, says U.S. and international support coupled with domestic efforts have played a large role in helping to contain the further spread of the Ebola virus. Ambassador Sulonte tells viewers Undimiyake Mwakalele that the current visit to Liberia of U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, inspires confidence in Liberia's ability to fight Ebola.
We attribute the decline basically to the support of the U.S. government, the international community, the private sector, and the resilience of the Liberian people, as I said. In addition to getting all of the support, the military building new containment centers, the support of the international community, the resilience of the Liberian people, the tribal chiefs getting involved, the religious leaders getting involved, coming up with very good communication strategies to inform the people of the danger of Ebola. I think all of this put together is helping to now reduce the crisis in Liberia.
Of course, it's good news that the numbers are now on the decline, but the nature under which Liberia became so vulnerable to Ebola, some attributed to various things. You've mentioned it already, the poor infrastructure, but also a lot of the corruption that has taken away money from building stronger infrastructure. Can you comment on that?
Well, as you know, corruption is everywhere. All over the world. Liberia is no exception to that. It is true that there are cases where money has been suffered by government officials and other individuals. Even in the private sector, there's corruption everywhere. The thing here is that the government have been able to put in place a mechanism to deal with that. You have heard that President Sirleaf has been able to dismiss a lot of government officials, have been able to incarcerate some of them for their acts in corrupting the public fund and public trust. That is something that we are dealing with. But more than that, I believe the Ebola came at a time when the whole health infrastructure was broken down due to 14 years of war. We had a brain drain. Most of the doctors and nurses fled for their lives. They moved into different communities for greener pasture. And as I say, if you have a country with 50 medical doctors to 4.1 million people, that is a problem.
Jeremiah Solonte is Liberia's ambassador to the United States. He was speaking with VOA's Ndimiyake Mwakalele in Washington. The Ebola virus was first identified in the 1970s in a tiny village in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where an intrepid team of researchers ventured to learn more. Among them was U.S.-born David Heyman, now a professor of epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. VOA's Henry Richwell spoke to the professor about the Ebola outbreak in West Africa.
As a young doctor with the U.S. Center for Disease Control, David Heyman witnessed the emerging threat of Ebola from its origins in the rainforests of the Democratic Republic of Congo, then Zaire, in 1976. The small team of international researchers took every precaution.
In fact, fear was so great that one of my first assignments was to go out to NASA to collect the isolation unit that had been used for the astronauts when they came off the moon.
Arriving at the village of Yambuku, the center of the outbreak, Heyman and his team knew little about Ebola and named the virus after the local river.
Ebola was considered a major threat back in 1976 because nothing was known about the virus. It was known it was related to, or it appeared to be related to, a Marburg virus, which people understood, science understood basically.
Since then, scientists have discovered fruit bats carry the Ebola virus and pass it on to humans and other primates. Heyman says they soon realized consumption of so-called bush meat is a pathway for the disease.
There was an outbreak in Gabon in 1996 when there were 18 hunters who killed a chimpanzee, and all 18 of them somehow during the butchering process became infected, took the infection home and infected family members, but it didn't spread further.
Professor Heyman led the global response to the 2003 SARS virus outbreak in China. The disease killed more than 700 people, but was contained.
It spread into developing countries in Asia, and it was rapidly stopped there by a global effort. And this was a true coordinated global effort where scientists were working together behind the scenes, exchanging information on almost a daily basis.
In contrast, Heyman says early appeals for help with the current Ebola outbreak were ignored.
There wasn't a robust enough response to stop it while it was still rural, and now it's spread into urban areas where it's more difficult.
There are indications that the Ebola education campaigns in West Africa are helping to halt the spread of the virus. New medicines are being fast-tracked. Professor Heyman says another area of research should also be prioritized.
To determine how best to keep patients alive by maintaining their internal balance of electrolytes, of chemicals, so that they can stay alive long enough for their own immune system to take over.
The World Health Organization says nearly 6,000 people have died from Ebola in West Africa since the outbreak began. Professor Heyman is optimistic the spread of the virus will have been halted by the beginning of the new year. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It's Wednesday morning, December 3rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Nigeria has canceled U.S. military training of a battalion to fight Boko Haram. The move comes weeks after Nigeria's ambassador to the United States criticized Washington for not providing arms to Nigeria's military. Chris Stein reports from Abuja.
Since April, U.S. Army troops have been training a battalion of about 600 Nigerian troops specifically to fight Boko Haram. The Islamist extremist group has scored numerous successes in a five-year campaign across northeastern Nigeria, overrunning bases and seizing territory from Nigeria's military. Lieutenant Colonel John Cantwell is the acting defense and army attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Abuja. He says the unit finished two phases of its training and has been equipped with non-lethal equipment like uniforms, vehicles, and communications gear.
The unit was a newly formed unit, so when we went through the first and second phase of training, we really were moving them from basic, getting them up to basic soldier skills, very basic infantry skills, but not something that was prepared to arguably face Boko Haram. And the intention was to create an enhanced infantry capability, something that is above and beyond what was currently in the Nigerian capacity.
U.S. trainers were due to start a third phase of training to get the unit ready to face Boko Haram. But last week, Cantwell says, Nigerian officials decided to cancel the training.
No, we did not receive any specific reason as to why they wanted to cancel the training, but their notification was in response to a request that we'd sent to them requesting their intention regarding moving forward with the third phase of training.
The American military trainers have since been redeployed elsewhere, Cantwell says, though between 30 and 40 American soldiers are still in Nigeria training their counterparts. A spokesman for Nigeria's military did not respond to phone calls, text messages, or emails. Nigerian officials have recently criticized the United States for not doing enough to assist them in the fight against Boko Haram. Last month, Nigeria's ambassador to the U.S., Ade Adefoye, said Washington had refused to sell Nigeria equipment that would help it take down Boko Haram. Despite these developments, Cantwell says the United States is still training the Nigerian military on how to maintain internal security, deal with Boko Haram, and participate in peacekeeping missions.
This does not close any door or anything like that to things like this in the future that the U.S. and Nigeria could explore together.
Cantwell says Nigeria's military plans to send the battalion trained by the U.S. into action in northeast Nigeria to fight Boko Haram. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
The long-awaited ZANU-PF Congress opened in Harare yesterday, Tuesday, with President Robert Mugabe chairing the party's Politburo meeting, which is expected to set the agenda for the week-long gathering. But while Mr. Mugabe was presiding over a meeting recommending he be given more powers to run the party, unidentified people were driving around Harare, littering the city with anti-Mugabe flyers. Erwin Chifera has more from the Zimbabwe capital.
Witnesses told Studio 7 that five people in the ZANU-PF vehicle threw the flyers inscribed "Vote of No Confidence Mugabe" as they drove around several streets in the city. Most people were, however, afraid to pick up the flyers. Harare resident Gilbert Kagodora tells Studio 7 he saw people in the truck dropping the flyers at the corner of Jason Moyo and First Street.
A clearly marked ZANU-PF truck from Ashland East drove to First Street and Jason Moyo, and it parked, and there were three people in the cab, and two were in the truck outside, and they dropped some flyers that were written vote of no confidence on Mugabe.
Another resident who declined to be named said the flyers were of poor quality and were unlikely to have been printed by ZANU-PF, but were being distributed by some disgruntled supporters. Studio 7 was unable to get comment from senior ZANU-PF leadership from Mashonaland East or acting spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo. But Media Center director and political analyst Ernest Mudzengi says, given the infighting in ZANU-PF, it is possible that the distribution of the flyers was done by one of the factions.
It's difficult to tell. It could be that the other faction, aligned to Vice President Joyce Muguru, is doing that out of anger. That is still possible. The other explanation could be that it's part of counterintelligence by the other faction loyal to Mr. Mnangagwa. It's possible both ways. We cannot tell.
He said it is unlikely that anyone in ZANU-PF would ever propose a vote of no confidence in President Robert Mugabe, especially with all the purges that have been going on in the past month and that have seen senior ZANU-PF members like Deputy President Joyce Mujuru being dumped from the powerful decision-making organ, the Central Committee. ZANU-PF has been rocked by serious infighting, pitting factions allegedly led by Ms. Mujuru and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa. Meanwhile, hundreds of ZANU-PF members who failed to get accredited in their provinces for the Congress were camped outside the party's headquarters, hoping to get their tickets into the venue. President Mugabe is expected to officially open the Congress Thursday. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A former Sudan People's Liberation Army commander, Maboy Marai McCoy, has joined rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. McCoy, who also served as State Minister for Health in Sudan in 2005, says he is joining the rebels in order to defend his community from attacks allegedly carried out by the South Sudan Army.
I'm from Lagos State and I'm a Dinka from Rumbek. This situation is too much for me. I am not enduring that at all. I will never endure it. He's arresting people and he's repeating the same thing that he has been doing some years back during the time of the National Liberation Movement. And we have been tolerating it so that our people become independent. So it is time for us to tell him, no, enough is enough. And I'm not going to accept him to continue killing our people, looting our people, raping our people. He must go.
McCoy, you sounded like you are annoyed or you are angry with President Kiir. Is there something that he has done to you personally that you're not happy about?
I was one of his commanders and I really saw a lot of things. Yeah, and he does not take people to law. He's completely very inhumane and he intimidates people, he threatens people, he talks threatening people that if this thing happens, I will kill you. He does not apply law. He's threatening us. He's threatening our people, frightening us. Millions of people are running away from him. This situation will not continue like this.
Did you make any efforts to speak to him to ask him why?
He does not accept to meet anybody. He keep away. And I did not go to Juba, but he came to Khartoum. I decided to meet him so that I tell him something. But it was difficult to meet him. So I decided to join Dr. Riek Machar in order to pursue the cause of our people. I'm not helping the US only, but I'm helping our people. And you will see we are going to join this. And then he will be taken.
You are telling me that you are joining the SPLM in opposition because you want to go and fight President Kiir. How are you going to do that?
Just like Riek Machar is defending his people. Riek Machar now is defending his people in Upper Nile. Myself, I'm going to start operation from where the masses are being attacked. He's attacking our weak people, and I will go on way from there, and we will repulse him, starting from where he's killing our people. In Dingale, not in Nuerland, in Rumbek, and in Rumbek, and where he's killing our people and looting our people and raping our people. That area, I will be found there, and I will see what will happen there from that area.
Mabo Mario Makwe is a former Sudan People's Liberation Army commander who said he has joined rebels loyal to former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar. He was speaking to John Tanza from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Meanwhile, South Sudan presidential spokesman Atene Wekatene dismissed Makwe as a disgruntled politician. He says President Salva Kiir did not order any attacks in Lake State.
So this is a local politician. So he's running away from his home. People are looking for opportunities. They run to the rebellion. How can President Kiir sponsor raids and the killing of people at Lagos State. When in fact, what is happening in Lagos State? These are tribal clashes that, you know, clans and inter-clans, you know, fighting. One clan revenge against another clan for killing, you know, their loved ones. And the story goes, where is President Kiir here?
That was South Sudan presidential spokesman Atene Wekatene. He was speaking with John Tanza from Juba. It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sportsman, here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with basketball. Angola's Primero de Agosto beat Kenya Port Authority's 79-47 at the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championships in Sfax, Tunisia on Tuesday. Nigeria's Dolphins edged Tunisia's SC Police Orientation 68-59, while the Republic of Congo's INSS outclassed Kenya's United States International University 100-49. Turning to football, the draws for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations takes place in the Equatorial Guinea capital Malabo today, Wednesday. To determine the seedings for the Nations Cup, the Confederation of African Football assessed the performances of the 16 qualified teams in their Nations Cup campaigns in 2010, 2012, 2013 and 2015, as well as their performances in the 2014 FIFA World Cup campaigns. Consequently, Nations Cup hosts Equatorial Guinea, Ivory Coast and Zambia are seeded. The second tier includes Algeria, Burkina Faso, Mali and Tunisia. The third tier comprises of Cameroon, Cape Verde Islands, Gabon and South Africa, while the fourth tier features the Democratic Republic of Congo, Republic of Congo, Guinea and Senegal. Meanwhile, the Confederation of African Football revealed that Ghana's Asamoah Gyan, Gabon's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Ivory Coast's Yahya Toure, together with Nigerians Ahmed Musa and Vincent Enyema, are the final nominees for the 2014 Africa Player of the Year Award. While Tunisia's Fakhreddine Ben Youssef, South Africa's Senzo Mewa, the Democratic Republic of Congo's Mubele Ndombe, and Algerians Akram Dagnit and El Hedi Belamieri are the final nominees for the 2014 Africa Player of the Year based in Africa. Now, Africa's 54 national team coaches and captains cast their votes to determine the winners to be crowned at the GLOCAF Awards ceremony in Lagos, Nigeria on the 8th of January. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, the third day of December.
As we join the global world for this year's International Day for People Living with Disabilities, even if Dr. Goodluck Ebele-Jonathan does not do anything for his people, he should please approve and implement the long-awaited bill for people living with disabilities in Nigeria. I am Prince John Osher Obaniku in Ogbodu Cattle Ranch, Crossover State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. President Barack Obama is urging Congress to pass $6.2 billion in emergency funding to fight the Ebola virus before the holiday recess in a few weeks. Speaking at the National Institutes of Health near Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, Mr. Obama said money to battle the disease is running out. He said passing a bill would be a Christmas present to the American people and to the world. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has announced the replacement of his interior minister and police chief hours after a military attack that left 36 people dead. President Kenyatta announced Tuesday he is replacing Interior Minister Joseph Ole Lenku and has accepted a retirement request from Police Chief David Kimayo. Egypt's top prosecutor says he will appeal the acquittal of former President Hosni Mubarak of all charges in the deaths of anti-government demonstrators in 2011. And that is it for this Wednesday, the third day of December edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty, Ricky Stryak, as well as our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, remembering Dr. Ali Mazarui, one of Africa's greatest thinkers. Dr. Mazarui died October 12th. The Kenyan intellectual spoke for the continent and leaves generations past and present and future. That's next time on VOA Africa.